Okay, so welcome to the second tutorial today. And today, or well, after the Haskell yesterday, today I'm walking through the actual code in Hyperion. And the code we're going to walk through. So please go to this repository, the Scalar3D, either on your through the code you have either locally or on cluster, or you can just open this GitLab website. Okay, yeah. So let me get going. Right. So again, this is just the workflows of Bootstrap in general. So the physics information will enter here. You write down your models, and you set up your models. You want Bootstrap. They are more abstract and theoretical, and you need to put numerical parameters to start the job, and then some interface. You use SimpleBoot to turn your Bootstrap or crossing equations into computer programs, like positive matrix program, and then to semi-definite programming problem. And this interface will talk to scalar blocks and block3D, and it will retrieve the data from off the blocks. And finally, everything gets integrated and sent to the solver. And the solver spits out the result, and we interpret the result. So Hyperion is also like this interface here. Okay. And the repositories will be working on mainly the Scalar 3Ds and Fermion 3Ds. And this is the part when we do this. So to encode the crossing equations and set up your parameters. And in general, these two repositories split into two parts. If you go to the directory called source, SRC, and you'll find two subdirectories, one called bounds, the other called projects. So the bounds are where you put files that encode your crossing equations, OP coefficient, and set up the basic SDPs. And the projects will encode things that actually launch the job. And where you also put in the numerical parameters and set up the gaps and everything. Okay. And so those two files, which you'll be mainly editing, talks to the rather huge Hyperion libraries. So each of these separate GitLab or GitHub repositories that are targeted for different functionalities that help us to encode the Bootstrap problem. And so I've divided them into kind of a few things that bounds will relatively heavily depend on those few things, and projects files will depend more on like how to set up the jobs and everything. And right, and the lowest layers are like externals. Those are C++ programs, and this is just talking to the clusters. Okay. Right. So, in our course GitHub, I think I just uploaded something called hyperionlibrary.pdfs. So those include links to the libraries I just showed here. And I've commented because in the actual files, in the code we're going to look at, you'll find a lot of functions imported from those libraries. So this Hyperion libraries PDF just helps, I hope, help you to find the functions if you want to look into the details. Okay. And so today we're going to look at, today and tomorrow, we're going to look at this part, that is to write down the crossing equations. And so they're kind of similar, but like today and tomorrow are kind of similar, but involve some different C structures, like from scalars to spinning blocks, and from very simple global symmetries to like ON global symmetries. And on Thursday, we'll move on to the project files where you launch the jobs and use more advanced search like OPE search and Denoné search and navigators. So I'll group those topics together on Thursday. Okay. So, all right. So now move on with this isinsic IEPS, like sigma epsilon bootstrap. So you can go to source bounds scalar 3D and isinsic IEPS.hs. And so in this files, or in general, in this kind of files, so for each different models, we will have a file look like this. And in each of them, they will first define like what external operators we have in these models, and define our global symmetries, define the problems, that's your model, and the goals, like are you doing feasibility test, or are you bounding your central charge or other things. And most importantly, we need to write down the crossing equations and define our OPE channels. And finally, we'll put everything together, to make our bootstrap problems as something that can be turned into SDP. Okay, and now for 3D icing. Our theory is it's a CFT, our assumption is a CFT with C2 global symmetry. We're bootstrapping the lowest scalars, Z2, even as Z2 odd scalars, sigma and epsilon. And the four-point functions involved in these bootstraps are those four, but of course you can exchange those two. And today, we're mainly just looking at the goals that we are doing the feasibility test, like whether some point in delta sigma delta epsilon plane is allowed or disallowed. Okay. And now I'm going to walk you through the file of basically which part is doing what. And I will start from the beginning and go through line by line. I've just taken the screenshot, extract those code, and put it on the screen. But you can turn the page yourself and see where we are. Okay. So first, I'll go into the first three tasks. They define our external operators, the global symmetries, and the models. So right. Okay. Now in the files, the very beginnings, you have something called language extensions. It really don't have to worry too much about them now. And I think the new version of Haskell, or I think it is, it get rid of a lot of language extensions. They're just just for the convenience of some usage in Haskell. And next, so in Haskell, programs are divided into modules. So each file is a module, and the module has the same name as your file, as you can see here. And if you don't have the same name, I don't think it will compile. So yeah, so and this is how you start your program, your module. And what comes next is you import functions that you want to use from other modules. And you just screw it down till the actual functions or definitions in our in this example. Okay, so go to the line that says data external op s, and this is how we declare our external operators, the sigma and the epsilon. So it's a data type with two constructors, and this deriving is just putting them in those classes. So like you can equate two operators, you can compare, enumerate, and so on, and. So those are just the external operators, symbolic abstract symbols. And for operators, we attach one label we have on scalar operator is a scaling dimension. So here it's a second data type called external themes, and so it's just two fields, one labeled in the delta sigma and one labeled in delta epsilon. Okay. And finally here it's our representation. So it's another data type called Z2RIP with two constructors.
What is the S in the external operator declaration?
Okay, I was hoping that didn't want to ask. Okay, so S here is it's a type variable, but it's called a phantom type here. A phantom type meaning it enters on this side when you define your it enters after the data type name, but it never appears on the other hand side when you define your constructor. So that's a definition of phantom type, and has some it has some when we define phantom types or when we use phantom types, the point is we want to group it with, at the same time we want to use some other functionalities, and here it's called it's something called reflect, and basically it means it's hard to explain here.
Concretely, in the CFD, S represents what?
It doesn't represent anything yet. It's a language functionality. Let me go to this slide. So here you can see S here again. So S associates. Through this expression, S becomes is associated with the external dimes. And you see the external operator S here. So you can think of this phantom times as some kind of linkings between the operators and the scaling dimensions.
Is that based on the position in the list, or the position in the functions?
Sorry, the position of the function?
How does the linking happen?
The linking happens through this reifies as external times. So, okay, let's go back to this slide. So here, S comes in with the operators.
Yes.
But here, we use S when we are representing the operators in terms of its scaling dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
So this line, using this, it's attaching the scaling dimensions to the operators. Yeah. I made this slide for the technical details of what happens actually happens in the code in Haskell. Yeah, but I don't think it's a good idea to confuse you right now. Honestly, it still confuse me.
But this reflex thing is built into Haskell?
Yeah, reflect, the module reflect is built into Haskell, and this reflect function is a standard function in reflect module.
Okay.
Yeah, I see something here.
It's like something kind of like an object having a value.
Yeah, it's like promoting your type as a type of values. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a way of attaching these scaling dimensions to the operators as we think about them. Like when we're doing physics, we don't need to keep carting around a delta sigma separate from sigma. We just have sigma.
Yeah.
And so this is a way of expressing that.
Okay. And so this line is doing that. It's putting the external ops S into the class hasRIP so that you can the first time we define things, they're very abstract and they have no properties, and we keep adding properties to them. Yes.
So why do you define, say, external operators at all instead of just external dimensions?
It's very important for the three-point structures, which we'll get to.
When you write down your crossing equations,
yeah,
you want doing things symbolically.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, like, you have an operator, it can have more than one property. So it's like, see, it's representation under symmetries, like spins and scaling dimension. Like here, it's just one part. Scaling dimension itself is just one part, and HasRip will attach everything to it.
So you can keep reifying more and more properties to a single type?
In practice, what we do is we just reify a tuple, so a tuple of a conformal representation and a global flavor representation.
But it's under the condition if we want, like, yeah.
You can do whatever you want.
I could also give it, like, a spin.
The conformal representation would include the spin as well.
Yeah. But there's no need to reify it. So you can, yeah, it's more like reify is some kind of like the one way to set your variables later on at a runtime.
Sorry, one last question.
Yeah.
Really slide. The three there is the space and dimension.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, and that's the operators and their representation. And next is this important data type called just the data type that characterizes our model or our model to bootstrap. And here we call it the Ising sigma epsilon. And so it's characterized by the external dimensions and the spectrum is the internal exchange operators they would want to put in. And in this example, in Ising particularly, the spectrums are each operator in the spectrum are labeled by their spins and the Z2 representation. And objectives, the third one objective, defined here later on. And they're just the goal of the program. Like, doing feasibility test, or the second one, you're doing OPE bound and everything. Okay, and the spins, the spins is just how many spins we want to go up to. And block parameters are parameters for the scalar block C++ program. Okay. Oh yeah, and just mention it's this V2 rational is a, it's just a, it's a vector of with two components and that gives a OP coefficient between sigma and epsilon. Yes.
Yeah. I just wanted to say this data structure is the only thing that you touch when you're running the code on a day-to-day basis. You're not actually messing with anything else. This is the thing that contains everything you need to be a bootstrapper.
Yeah. So again, in like at this stage, we're just declaring things, and the rest of this file are giving them properties. And so at the end, all you need is this data type, but you need the functions later on to describe this data type. Okay, so now getting to the meat, the crossing equations, OPE channels, and finally, going from the bootstrap problem to SDPs. Okay, so crossing equations. So in Hyperion, when we write down crossing equations, we don't need to write them in terms of blocks. We just stopped here at the stage when we just write. We only care about the functional coefficient that depends on the crossing ratios, the Z and Z bar or U and V. And so here are the, I just listed the crossing equations in terms of those functions. And then what we do is we group them into the crossing even and the crossing odd part. Even and odd just like, for example, those two even just depends on what sign you get in front of, right after the equation mark. Okay, these are what's going into the actual function called the crossing equations. And so, right, so after writing, like, put them into the crossing even and crossing odd category, then we just put the derivative basis of our functionals in front of them. And here, so you can see exactly like the first three just goes here, the last one goes here. Yeah, I hope this is readable. Any questions on this side? Like just to match, like matching this part to this part, okay?
Does the left column have anything to do with the right column?
Sorry?
What's the relation between the left column and right column?
Left column. This is just the crossing even, crossing odd, and depends on whether they're crossing even or crossing odd. You put the it correspond different sets of m and n's, like that's different sets of derivatives.
Okay.
Yeah.
The direct correspondent.
Yeah. And okay, so now those are the contents we want to put in. Now I want to explain something about the details.
Could you again the first three lines? First three lines of the slides.
I'm going through the details of the syntax. Okay, so crossing equations. This is type signatures, and so it takes one thing that of this long type called 4-point function term. Just ignore it for now. And what it returns is a vector with four components. Each component is a pair. The first term of the pair is called Taylor's ZDB. It's basically this part, so the derivative part. And the second component of this pair called free vector BA. So free vector is just a vector. And the BA means, free vector BA means the basis vector is of type B, and the coefficient is of type A. So right now, A and B are very general, like almost no constraints. So later on, the B will become blocks, and A is just still some numbers. So what comes out from here is are those things, like 1, 2, 3, 4, correspond to your crossing equations. The first part, the derivative, the second part will be vectors of blocks. Okay, and this G0 or G0 is this big complicated types, but instead of looking at G0, I wanted to look at how it enters this expression. So if we just look at the first line GS6666, it's defined, the GS is defined here. So GS taking four operators, you can think of them as operators, is defined as G0 taking those four operators and a 4-point structure and a scattering channel. Okay, so yes. So basically G0 is G0 takes four operators and a 4-point structure and as a channel. It gives you this and gives you back to the vectors of blocks. This is all abstract there. Actually in Hyperion, we don't really see G0 explicitly. At this stage, you will only encode this, and Hyperion libraries will take care of decomposing them into blocks. So you don't have to worry about that part. Okay. And this is where it does it. So isinsig apps crossing mat. It takes a channel. The channel is of So the channel is some OP coefficient attached with like OP coefficient labeled by the three external operators and the 3-point structure. And what it returns is a crossing mat, which is a crossing matrix. So the way it does it, it's the only argument is still just a channel. And it applies a crossing matrix, which is in the library. And the crossing matrix take the channel and take the crossing equation we just wrote down, like all those that equation, this equation. So crossing matrix will take those arguments and turn them into the crossing mat. So this step does the block decomposition for you. Okay, any questions here? No, okay. Yeah, just mention it. This is where, if you want to change your model, if you want to bootstrap a different model, this is where you have to change to enter your physical constraints. This function instead is rather standard. So you just put things here. Okay. Okay, and if you're wondering what this tag means, you can read the next slide. It's kind of related to proxy, and it's, yeah. And okay, so that's 4-point function, and now I'm moving on to the OPE channels. Okay, so after you define your OPE channels, then the function we just look at can turn, can decompose the blocks for you. Okay, and the OPE channels will correspond to those I just stripped from the mixed Ising bootstrap. And so the crossing channels will correspond to those operators. And yeah, so the first Z2 even, those O plus. And it will take, because these channels will have general spins. So this is taking a spin as, here it's a symmetric tensor rep, but basically it's an operator is like labeled by its spins and its scaling dimension, I think. And it returns a channel of length 2, so the 2 will correspond that you have 2 OP channels here. And next slide, Z2-odd correspond to this part. As you can see, again, it's a general, can have general spins. And it only has one channel, which is correspond to this one OPE coefficient. And the rest are the identity channels, stress tensor channels, external operator channels, and they don't take arguments. Because, yeah, that's what comes inside the exchange operators are already defined. As identity operator and stress tensor.
So this part defines how many OP coefficient you have in each
shot. Yeah. Okay. So what we'll do next? So now here, these channels are abstract, just an abstract way of labeling those different reps and. If you remember from this slide, takes very explicit structures of OP coefficients and then turns, then decompose your your crossing equations into blocks. So one more step is to go from these labels, these abstract labels, to the OP coefficients. And that's what this MAT mat function does. So it takes a channel of those types, and it returns the thing that the crossing matrix decomposed. And inside, it will call this function that you see you saw a few slides ago. So what it does is the mat is defined case by case. Each case is it's a channel that we defined, the abstract channels we defined. And you need to write down the vector that corresponds to the actual OPE coefficient. And those things get plugged in the Ising-Sig crossing mat functions that you saw earlier. OK, so what's coming here is, so remember, Z2 even correspond to this case. And what you encode is OP coefficient identical means two identical external operators. And those are operators are sigma for the first line. And then internal representation, it corresponds to this O here. And because this vector is because we're dealing with scalar structure. So the vector here is just unit. Excuse me. And the second line corresponds to lambda epsilon epsilon O. Okay. And then second case is O minus case, Z to odd. And very similar, except that now the two external operators are, their sigma epsilon are different. So here it's, instead of coefficient identical, it's, we use a different function called coefficient generic. And you take two, you can take two different operators and the internal rep again. And these two lines relate the lambda sigma epsilon O and lambda epsilon sigma O. Okay, and they're related by the signs, depending on the internal rep. Okay? Questions?
No, sorry, can you just explain again this last stuff?
Next one to the end. This one?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's because this is what it's doing. So it's the same variable, but they have a sign difference, possible sign difference. So because we only have 1 degree of freedom here.
So. That can be seen from three-point structure.
Yeah, it's actually finding it in terms of three-point structure and leaving the OB coefficient alone. That's a convention issue, though. That's
not. Yeah. Is that a convention question? Or is that a question of why we do this?
There is a minus one to the L factor that comes into the conformal structure.
Yeah.
You can either absorb it into the OPE coefficient, or you can absorb it into like the definition of the conformal structure. Doesn't matter as far as the numerics is concerned, but like the minus one to the L factor has to come in somewhere, and that's this is where we're putting it in.
So but at the end, we want to these coefficients, they are, you can think of it as variables we're trying to solve. And here, because they're only related by a sign, so we only keep one variable, and this is what it's doing.
I understand that equation, but could you explain how that equation is encoded here?
How it's in, so this is a function that's defined, it's defined somewhere in the Hyperion library. And go ahead.
Yeah, so OPE coef generic. So the thing that says, well,
what did I do?
the thing that says vec parentheses. So the parentheses is a weird category thing that we need to think about, but like just the vec parentheses is just the single unique element of the space of conformal conformal three-point structures in this.
Could you speak slowly?
We are telling the code what the different conformal three-point structures are for the three-point correlation functions. The conformal block expansion is just a projection of two three-point functions onto a four-point function. And so vec parenthesis is just as the unique three-point structure, because scalars only have a unique conformal three-point structure. And OPE coef generic, the first element that it takes is the definition of the sigma epsilon O three-point structure. The second line it takes, the minus one to the L times vec parenthesis, is the epsilon sigma O three-point structure. But it's the same three-point structure. They're not independent, right? There's a sign shift. So this is just telling you what that permutation rule is. And so the first line corresponds to sigma epsilon O. The second line corresponds to epsilon sigma O.
So what is this vec?
It is just an abstract vector of a one-dimensional vector space with a coefficient of either
so,
one or one.
So it's just a placeholder for the...
It's a placeholder.
It's a placeholder.
Okay. It gets more complicated when you talk about spinning structures, for example, which we'll get to.
Tomorrow. Okay, and the rest just define Matt on other channels, and this one is just identity channel. And I believe this is very standard. So yeah, you don't have to understand, so identity rep is just the representation of the identity operator. Blocks fixed is a scaling dimension fixed to be zero. And the last zero is a spin. And yeah, and the identity OPE is it's a separate local function here defined as the result of this are those OPE coefficients that you saw earlier that spit out by the OPE coefficient generic. And this is just like the vec in parentheses. The result of this is another vector. And the what comes inside is the three-point structures. And they take those arguments. Okay. And similarly for stress tensor channel and external operator channels.
And can we?
Yeah.
So to answer the question for why we go through so much pain to define an external operator instead of just keeping the quantum numbers lying around, it's because right here, the OPE coef external symbol is the payoff for all of that work, which is that if you are just carting around these numbers, you need some way of telling the code that like an external operator that's being exchanged in the controllable block expansion is the same operator as that external operator, and that the OPE coefficient for example, sigma, sigma, epsilon, and sigma, epsilon, sigma are the same. This is where that comes in, and that's why we did all that work.
Okay.
Okay. So that finished the...
I still have a question. So
yeah.
Do you mean this V theta term is derived inside the code instead of manually putting?
Sorry, theta?
So this V theta term contain external operator, lambda sigma, sigma, epsilon, lambda sigma, epsilon, sigma.
Yeah.
That term is automatically derived in the code instead of manually putting.
Yeah, it's exactly, that's the only time you ever see it. And then the angle that you, for OPE scan, you do need to specify that later, but like this, you're done after this.
So later on in the code, there will be encoded like sine theta and cosine theta. And you pass in different theta and you pass in different OPE coefficients, like that.
But the subtlety of like sigma, sigma, epsilon, and sigma, epsilon, sigma being the same OPE coefficient,
yeah, how's that encoded?
It's exactly here.
It's here.
At this point, you're done. You don't need to do anything more.
Okay, so the last bit is not flipping. Great. I really like this page.
we also like this.
Really? This is more serious than I thought.
Is it changing on your screen?
Yeah, it's.
You might want to exit full screen and come back.
I did.
Oh my.
Yeah. Let me restart it. So you can stare at the code for a minute. Okay. What did I say? Yeah.
Could you go to previous slide?
Sure.
What does the code actually do? It replaces epsilon to sigma sigma epsilon. What does the code actually do? It's define a replace rule. Or...
So the this is deep in the weeds of Hyperion that users don't need to know. But what we're compiling here, what an OPE coefficient is just a function that, given your external operators. Given some external operators, tells you whether there exists an OPE channel that corresponds to this, these representations that are exchanged. The external OPE channel, all it does is it's doing the conversions for you for all these different permutations of sigma, sigma, epsilon, sigma, epsilon, sigma, epsilon, sigma, sigma. All this is automatically done for you. You don't need to think about it. As far as the end user is concerned, it just happens. And that's all you need to know. You don't need to know anymore. You can go look at the code for if you want. But
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
So I suppose that in the more general case, where the external operators carries a non-trivial conformal representation, then this will also generalize and automatically take into account all the different three-point structures, right?
You'll see it tomorrow with spins. You do need to encode the different structures here. So, for example, if you have psi psi epsilon or psi psi sigma, and then the permutations, each permutation will correspond to one conformal structure.
Don't worry, because here you do all these permutations automatically, right? Well. There you did it by hand in the blackboard, right?
Well, this is just because that L is zero.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I get the questions about tomorrow, so never mind.
Okay. Okay, next one. So what remains is to use those functions we defined before, and I might want to explain this part first. Yeah, okay. Let me continue. So the rest of the file is the goal is to put this model we defined, the Ising sigma epsilon, as into some type class. And when putting them into different type class, we'll reuse the functions we defined before. And if you remember from yesterday, each type class will have they need some functions to be defined, some specific function to be defined, and those functions will be defined by the functions we just discussed. Okay, and now first things, this bulk constraint is to turn part of the problems into the positive constraints, just rewrite them into positive constraints. And basically, okay, so this part deals with the internal operators of within the spectrum. So we call them bulk constraints, just correspond to everything in the spectrum. And so we will iterate through everything in the spectrum by giving them the deltas and L's, and then label them with the Z2 rips. So each operator we're passing, they're labeled by delta, spins, and their Z2 representation. And depending on their whether they are Z2 even or Z2 odd, they are passed into different channels, and then passed into the mat functions. And the whole thing before that turns them into positive constraints. And so again, if you are doing a different model, you might want to change this part a little bit. And different models might have different channels here. and yeah, and correspond to different channels you defined earlier. The map functions, you need to rewrite some of them depending on the channels again, but everything before are rather standard, so you don't have to touch them. Okay. Questions here? Comments? Yeah.
Can you comment on the filter even?
Ah, yeah, thank you. So filter even spins is just, okay, so spins here, yeah, syntax. So if you remember, you probably don't remember, but I think Sigma Heaps has a field called spins. So that's specify how many spins we want to include in the bootstrap. See, for example, from zero, from 1 to 21 integer spins. And so these spins are spins over there. This is just a syntax sugar that you don't have to write them down. And the filter even spins is just filter the list with that keep on the even spins only. And that is just because when we are dealing with sigma O or epsilon O, we don't want for the odd spins, then this coefficient vanish. So we don't want to keep them and just want to plug in the even spins. Okay. Okay, almost the last bit. This bit is to put the it takes an argument is our model, the Ising sig epsilon, and turn it into an STP problem. And what it does is, so this is do notation. So what comes inside is kind of a monad context. And so the more important things here, so first of all, this bulk constraints come from the function we defined in the last page. And so those lines combined with those lines, as you can see, ipsmat got put in here. So they're basically the same thing as the last page, but just defined separately for each of the isolated channels, like the independent channels from, channels independent from the bulk. And then the majority of the most important bit of this function is where you define your positive constraints, or you declare your positive constraints, your objectives, and how you normalize. And yeah, so as you can see here, objective is what the quantity we want to optimize. Normalization is we choose a block to fix the normalization of the crossing equation. And constraints is a rest that are required to satisfy the positive conditions. Okay, and so from this line to here, this is for feasibility mode. The objective is because we are not optimizing everything, so it's just a zero. And the normalizations, we choose the unit operator, or the identity operator, we call it the unit here, or defined here. It's an identity channel. And the rest is a bulk, and then the external channels and the stress tensor channels all comes in into the positive constraints. So they're mapped exactly like 1 to 1 here, okay? And you need to define them differently, of course, for different objectives. And for stress tensors, then the thing that we put in the objective we want to optimize will be the one corresponding to the identity channel. And and the norm is the one corresponding to the stress tensor channel. And the rest, again, is the positive constraints. Questions? OK. It's just the rest. And I omitted some lines here. There are some other things like external operators and external operator channels and navigator. I think navigator is in there too. And so finally, this at the end of this do notations is what you return. Return is a function defined in monad. and so it just return, just return this SDPs exactly as you defined over there, those three constraints, objective norms, you put them there, objectives, norm, and constraints, the order is a little bit. But then you just call some standard functions from, not standard, functions defined in the Hyperion libraries. And they specify the SDPB objective, the SDPB normalization and everything. Okay, and this is really the last bit. So this is a function which is defined in the last two slides. And so this function is used to make Ising sigma epsilon as an instance of 2SDP. So 2SDP is a type class. And the type class has, here, this is the function of this type class. And so we need to define it when we want to declare something as an instance of this type class. And it is defined by the thing we just we discussed in the last two slides. Okay, and to make it other instances of other classes and like the rest of everything. Yeah, and so this finished like giving all the properties we want this model to have. And then in the other file, when you actually call the jobs, then all you care about is just this bit. Okay. Yeah, and yep, so that is the end of the bounds file. And so the actual launch the jobs will be put in the project files later. But here, I think because of the syntax, and I think you might want to get used to the structures. And the one practice I recommend is there is a file in the bound scalar 3D called singular scalar. So that is just one scalar. And the code is structured in a very similar way. But if you take that scalar, that file, and try to reproduce the Ising sigma epsilon, that might help you to navigate like what you have to do when you add a new operator or when you add a global symmetry, like a Z2 global symmetry. And of course, if you don't want to do that, you can do something new. Like you can see instead of sigma epsilon, it's put it into epsilon epsilon prime, or you just work out three operators altogether. But it's a project I'm working on, so just those files are on repository right now too. So if you wrote the code and you want to compare, you can use them as a reference. Yeah. One last bit is, right, so when you write the code, I recommend, again, you open two windows. One, you write the code and you can save it without quitting it. And the other window is just start your stack GHCI. And so after you finish editing and save it, and then you just reload on the other side so you can keep checking if your code is compiling or not. Okay. And I also skipped some slides with coding details like the reflect and tagged. If you're curious, you can read those slides. And,
I still have a question. In the code, which place does the code specify a gap in each channel?
Not yet here. So the gaps will be set in the project files. The numbers will put in the project files.
It's the spectrum
object
that contains all the gap data. So it's completely set, totally separately from the SDP. The SDP is a completely different file. You don't even need to think about gaps in that context, and vice versa.
Right, I should have this somewhere else, but I couldn't find it right now.
So basically, this file encoded the coursing vector.
Yeah. Yes.
crossing vector than how to turn it into an SGP. And that's all. Without having to actually type in the whole crossing vector either. It's just nice.
I think I have a type somewhere here.
Yep.
Sorry, just spoilers.
Close your eyes if you don't.
I don't know where it is. I probably can find it.
It's...
Spectrum is on block 4 or. No,
you don't show spectrum, just show a project file. Just show a project file.
I just want to find the actual type.
Actually, it's at the very top.
No, it's not here. I don't think it's block 4.
No,
Okay, so sorry. This is a showing off that we don't know where the function is.
I don't think you should be going deep in the libraries for this. You should show it in context. Where are you using it?
But where we use it, I don't find it very easy to read.
Still, I think it would be the right place to look.
So if you go to the projects, back into the source directory and the projects, and then the whichever file you open and search for spectrum.
Yeah, I see.
Okay, so that's it for today, I think. Yeah.